It has not been established whether the drug-induced lowering of serum cholesterol has a detrimental, beneficial, or no effect on the mortality due to atherosclerosis or coronary heart disease, which means they don't know if the drug works. But on the other side is insurance company type print telling you what the side effects of Atrumit is. Now, the other drug that got a lot of publicity recently is cholestyramine, also known as Questran. And there they ran a very interesting controlled study. It went like this. They took two groups of patients who had high cholesterol, and one group they fed cholestyramine, and the other group they left alone. At the end of the experiment, the cholestyramine did indeed lower the cholesterol, and at the same time, it reduced the death rate from heart attacks. However, the patients who were on cholestyramine had double the normal deaths from violent causes, homicides, accidents, suicides, so that the funeral rate, as we doctors call it, was the same in both groups. You just changed the cause of death. Instead of dying from heart disease, you died from suicides, accidents, homicides. I was asked to comment on this information when it first came out in the New England Journal of Medicine. My comment was that if your doctor tries to put you on Questran or cholestyramine, be sure you call up your insurance agent and have him put a double indemnity clause into your policy. What is a beta blocker? Well, maybe I'm going to use this not only as an opportunity to get off the hook, but also to introduce one of the most famous doctors in this area who I call by his first name and who's an expert on this kind of thing, Dr. Tom Stone. Tom, you want to say a word about beta blockers? All right, then I'll say something about it. A beta blocker is supposed to be a drug that blocks certain what are known as adrenergic responses, certain responses of the sympathetic nervous system. And that's how it's supposed to block the response of your blood vessels and heart, particularly your coronary blood vessels, to certain forms of stress. And that's what it's supposed to do. Now, does it work? Well, the answer is yes, it works. But the question is, what is the price that you pay for using the beta blocker? You see, in medicine, most drugs work. The only question is, how much is it worth?
We might mention in that context another book by Dr. Lester Morrison, which I think might enable you to avoid the necessity for beta blockers. It's called, Dr. Morrison's book on healthy hearts. Dr. Morrison has been practicing medicine in Canada and the United States for about 50 years and has developed what I believe is a very complete program on the control of any kind of heart problems or arterial problems. I really recommend it very highly, and also the program which Dr. Morrison expounds.
You see, I have to tell you what I'm impressed with. I'm impressed that all you people came out at 9:30 in the morning to listen to a talk about nutrition, because you tell me if I'm wrong, Barbara. Had we invited people to come out here in the 1960s, this place would have been empty. And we might have had a dozen people. I think that nobody can listen to nutritional approaches until they are terrified at the idea of the doctor's drugs. Until you get really scared of beta blockers, you cannot listen to us talk about calcium and vitamin C and all that kind of stuff. And therefore, my goal is to try to absolutely frighten people about the dangers of doctors' drugs, because then they can look at the alternatives, at their other options. It's only when people get scared enough, and they can only get frightened when they have the knowledge, that they'll be able to listen to this kind of a talk. And therefore, when I see that last year the confidence level in doctors dropped from 88% 10 years ago to 40% last year, and I see that the hospitals had a 25% lower occupancy rate across the United States, then I know that audiences like you are going to proliferate and grow because there's no other way to do it. See, now people have to listen to nutrition in spite of the doctor. Can the doctor ever learn about nutrition? My answer is no. There is no way to ever teach a doctor, because I was a medical school professor. I was an instructor for 12 years and an associate professor for another 12 years. And I do not believe there's any way of teaching doctors about nutrition. So that means that unless you've got the one doctor in 1,000 who agrees with my books, for example, you're not going to be able to find a doctor who knows about nutrition. Why is there a block among doctors? Well, I have to tell you that I don't think it's just because of money. You see, if you want my opinion, I don't think doctors are really in it for the money. I'll give you the evidence. The epidemic of cesarean sections in the U.S., 29%, is matched by Canada, which has the same 29%, even though Canadian MDs don't get paid any more for doing a section than for doing a vaginal birth. You see, my argument is that doctors do what they do because they believe in what they're doing. Listen how a doctor sells a cesarean section. He says to a woman, he sells it on theological grounds. He says, "Wouldn't you rather have your baby from above than from below?" Now, who wants to have a baby from as pejorative a place as below when you can have it from as divine a place as above? Please.
I had two cesarean babies, and I would have died when the baby would have died. My birth channel was too small. It wasn't how would I like it. It had to be done. So I can't always agree with that kind of
Well, I can tell you that my recommendation for any woman who's had a cesarean section is to get a hold of the latest book known as Silent Knife. And the author is Nancy Wainer Cohen. And she's done a wonderful thing. She has collected women from around the country into a new organization called CSEC for Section Awareness. And she's telling women how to have babies more safely by VBAC, vaginal birth after cesarean section. And the thing that I'm surprised at and gratified by in the 1980s is the appearance of new kinds of health groups. Years ago, we used to form health groups on the basis of natural disease. You'd have the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society, the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation. Now, people are forming health groups on the basis of the damage that they have suffered at the hands of doctors. So now we have ABC, the Association of Bendectin Children, children who were damaged by that drug that mothers were given for morning sickness. We have cesarean section awareness. We have the DES action groups, because 6 million women in this country were given DES between 1940 and 1980. We have the DPT organization, Dissatisfied Parents Together, who represent the parents of children damaged by immunizations. And I think that if anything is remembered in the 1980s, it will be that ordinary people began to form groups based on the biggest cause of disease today, the doctors.
And I just had a signal from Marjorie that we have a book list that Noah has published just recently, and you'll find a copy on your seat if you haven't already discovered it. Recommended reading list, and you might add the books that Bob has recommended today to that list.
And we must add the Noah cookbook.
Oh, it's on there.
Oh, it's on there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because for those of you who are new to this organization, the Noah cookbook just got endorsed by Senator McGovern in his report, who finally caught up with it.
Right. I want you to look through these questions.
Oh, okay.
We'll never get through all the questions, and we might impose on Bob to answer a few at lunch, if that's all right with
Fine.
You.
All right. Should I look through these while somebody asks a question?
Yeah, you have Jackie.
May I ask Dr. Lindsay's statement? No, I'm looking right here. Dr. can all go through the
question. Good. Any specific nutritional advice to a 65-year-old man facing cataract eye surgery? Yes. My first piece of advice is to find out about cataract surgery, even if it's done by laser. And there's now all kinds of books, because I see them in the bookstores, that will tell you the risks of cataract surgery, the specific risks of implants, the dangers of hemorrhage, infection, worsening of vision, and on, which may cause you to think three times before you go for a cataract operation. Then once you get scared enough of the surgery or of the laser therapy, which is not an uncomplicated tool because laser can also cause burns on its own, then the next thing to do is to look at those doctors who've written books that give you nutritional approaches that have been of tremendous value in lots of people with cataracts and that have improved their vision. And I know that Barbara has those books, and I know that she has a whole bunch of hints. You don't know how careful you must be of the ophthalmologist, because he has a curse of his own. He says to you, if you don't take my treatment, you will go blind. And then you have to see whether or not he's right. If you go to an ophthalmologist or even an ordinary doctor today, he will measure your eye pressure. He'll put that little instrument, the tonometer, on the outside of your eye, and he will take the pressure in order to see whether you have or are going to develop glaucoma. Does he tell you that 90% of the patients with elevated eye pressures never develop glaucoma, and that 30% of all patients with glaucoma have normal eye pressures? That's the limits of error of the tonometry test. So, do you want to give any specific advice on that?
Well, there's a lot of information about any kind of pre-surgery preparation. And, of course, we talked about that a little bit earlier. Cataract surgery, treating cataracts, which I think probably Bob would rather have me talk about, can be at least a part of nutrition. I don't know that you can always avoid cataract surgery. You can certainly delay it, and hopefully, if you work at it long enough and hard enough, can avoid it. It's been discovered that of course we know that vitamin A and zinc are important to the tissue of the eye. That would be important to any protection against cataracts or treatment of it. Vitamin E to protect the vitamin A. There's been some recent information about glutathione, an antioxidant, which seems to be very helpful in treating cataract problems. Something called glutathione. It's spelled GLUTATHIONE. And it is available.
I got another comment to make about cataracts.
Yeah.
When you go to consider cataract surgery, you then have an opportunity to review your history in order to determine how you got those cataracts. Now, if you ask the doctor, he says, well, it's because you're old. You see, now, I have to tell you that doctors learn peculiar things about old folks. They learn that if you come with a complaint, they say to you, what do you expect at your age? And that's why I tell all older folks that when you go to the doctor, tell them you're 35 years old.
And then you worry a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And if he starts to argue with you, you can ask him, who knows your age better, you or he? Now, if you are facing a cataract operation, then you have a chance to review your medical history, which the ophthalmologist will not do with you. But you might find out that you were prescribed certain drugs that carry the adverse reaction of cataracts. Let me name three of them. Cortisone, prednisone, and Melaril, the tranquilizer, the psychotropic drug. And that's just three of a whole bunch of drugs. I tell everybody who's facing cataract surgery to look up, or if necessary, the print is plenty small, have somebody else look up for them the side effects of all the drugs they've taken over the last 30 years and see if any of those drugs might have been responsible for the present epidemic of cataracts in the United States. You see, doctors blame a lot of things on old age. They even do it with women. They tell...
Especially with women.
Especially with women. They tell older women that they shouldn't deliver children. They shouldn't get pregnant. I remember when I was in medical school, I was taught that women over the age of 45 should not have children because they might have congenitally malformed children with Down syndrome or mongolism. And when I interned, that level went down to 42. The age went down to 40 during my residency. In the 1960s, it went down to 35. In the 70s, it went down to 32. And now, if you have a baby over the age of 30, the doctor tells you that you are a geriatric mother. Now, at the other end, you're not supposed to have a baby as a teenager, because teenage pregnancies, undeservedly, have a very bad reputation. So, therefore, if you don't have a baby between 24 and 24 and a half, you have missed the boat. And I thought about this a long time. I thought to myself, why would God have made such a mistake? Why would he let these women have babies for 10 or 15 extra years and they would be malformed babies? Why didn't he bring on the menopause at age 35 or at least at the age of 40? Why would he have made such a terrible mistake? So then I started to look in the medical journals and the answer became clear. Because at Johns Hopkins Hospital and in a number of other places, when they compared groups of mothers of mongoloid babies to groups of mothers of normal babies, the first group had a history of 7 times as much diagnostic, medical, and dental x-rays as the second group. But you see, the doctor isn't going to say, I zapped you with my x-ray. Instead, he says, you're too old, you're geriatric, you've lived too long. Or in the case of cataract patients, well, I've been so successful in keeping you alive that you have lived long enough to develop cataracts. You should be grateful to me. I love to listen to doctors talk. I hear doctors use phrases like, well, for example, they'll say, I'm only human, and the only time they say that is when they're caught making a mistake. Well, the doctor will tell you that cataracts are hereditary, but then he'll tell you that most things are hereditary. When these damaged babies first began to appear from that anti-nausea drug Bendectin and from diethylstilbestrol and from Pitocin given to speed labor up, the doctors all said, oh, these are hereditary conditions, but they got corrected by the judges and juries of this country.
I think it's important to see the cataract as a symptom rather than people focusing on it as a problem. The cataracts are a symptom of a degenerative process, and its an external manifestation will often alert you that there's something wrong.
But thank you, Tom.
My arm's going to fall off.
Oh, well, please, we got to respond to that kind of emergency.
Well,
I'll get to the questions.
In the booklets and the things that we're talking about, I find there's a wonderful book called Women, the Crisis in Sex Hormones. It's, I think, $4.98. It's written by Barbara Seaman and her husband, and covers a lot of issues.
Thank you very much. Barbara Seaman is one of my best friends, because years ago she wrote her first book called The Doctor's Case Against the Pill. And now she's head of a women's network organization. And as long as you're mentioning her, I have to mention one other of my favorite organizations, which goes under the acronym of HERS, H-E-R-S, Hysterectomy Education and Research Service. And they're headquartered in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And they are designed to help prevent women from having hysterectomies. Now, here's their record. They've had about 6,000 women who they have counseled and sent for second opinions, and 98% of those women have not gone through with the original recommendation to have a hysterectomy. So now we're learning what the true incidence of unnecessary hysterectomies is. But you see, doctors love hysterectomies. If you say to a doctor, well, doctor, would you do a hysterectomy on your own wife? And his answer is, 50% of all doctors' wives have had hysterectomies. And that convinces doctors that it's a good operation. It convinces me that we need a study to find out how the doctors feel about their wives. How to increase the immune system. Well, that's the big question with AIDS these days. Since doctors don't know how to increase the immune system, therefore you have to turn to other people, like the people who are interested in nutrition. And first of all, you have to be careful that you don't make your immune system worse, because AIDS, as you know, can be transmitted not only through whole blood, but through blood products like plasma, gamma globulin, the new hepatitis vaccine, which comes from the blood of male homosexuals in New York City, Rogam, the drug that is given to pregnant women or to women post-pregnancy who are Rh negative in order to prevent further troubles with their next babies. Rogam is also a human blood product. So my recommendation to people is that if your doctor comes at you with any blood or blood product, try to pass as a Jehovah's Witness. And furthermore, you got to be careful these days about going to a blood bank to donate blood, because now they got a new test called the AIDS antibody test, which they're applying to every unit of blood that's donated. Now, if you turn out to be positive on that test, and the incidence of false positives is 50%, just to give you some idea of the error rate of the test, if you turn out to be false positive, the blood bank does three things. First of all, they notify you by mail. So you got to think, who opens up my mail? Do I want that person to know that I have a positive blood test for AIDS? They also put put your name on a computer list, which they assure us is confidential. And the third thing they do is they send your name to the Board of Health, where it's only available to, quote, authorized personnel. So I tell people that these days it's dangerous to get blood and it's dangerous to give blood. Name of the book you showed by Diane Rowe. Drug-induced nutritional deficiencies. Dr. Undenstock, 2 months ago at NOAA, said there are no acidophilus bacteria in any yogurt currently sold. You know about that better than I do.
I that's one of the very few things I disagree with Dr. Undenstock about. I think there are probably some very good yogurts. I think some of those that are heavily sugared, the sugar might have had some reaction with the acidophilus in the yogurt, and you might want to avoid those. But I think for the most part there is some benefit in eating yogurt if you're not milk intolerant.
After a hard fall, should one check on body alignment? My arm has been hurting over 2 weeks. Or what type of doctor? Most of my weight was on the left arm. Well, now you got to be careful, because you see, if you go to an MD, you can be pretty sure that he's going to want to take an X-ray, because doctors believe in X-rays. Doctors are priests of their own religion, and every priest likes to show you that he can see right through you. And so, of course, a doctor turns to an X-ray. Now, if you go to a chiropractor, if you get well by yourself or as a result of the chiropractic treatment, I would not go back and tell that to your doctor, because the MD has a couple of phrases that he uses for people who get well by chiropractors. He says, number one, you're lucky. Or number two, he says, you had a spontaneous remission. And that really bothers me, because I do not understand why we MDs don't get some of those spontaneous remissions. Why do the chiropractors get them all? It's very unfair. Did we answer that question?
Oh, you got it. I don't think you'll necessarily disagree with me, but I think it needs to be said. A lot of your comments are directed against doctors being irresponsible, but I think many natural healthcare professionals are also. I am one. I mean, I'm a natural healthcare professional, so I'm talking about my own field. Many people just read things and hear things superficially and give out a lot of very superficial information. No matter who you go to, it's important to take responsibility in your own hands and do lots of reading.
You know, I treasure you. Would you introduce yourself? I want to know who you, I think everybody here wants to know who you are.
I'm I'm injured parent. I'm an amputee and also working in a health field professionally for many years. But I also disagree that you can get everything through reading, because I tried that for years. You know, you need a combination of professional help and taking responsibility to read.
You investigate
different opinions, because it's very, a lot of people have spent a lot of money and gotten a lot sicker, both from natural health professions and otherwise.
You know, this is a person who you have to have as a speaker in the future, because you just said a few things that I can't tell you how much I agree with, and that you're quite right. I would not have thought of saying them. The first is that you can't get it all from books. What books can do is to direct you to certain people, but you still need that people-to-people contact, because all that the books do is to raise more questions. The second point that you mentioned is the one that I use in my own shorthand by saying that one has to be suspicious of anybody in the healing field, because every healer is by nature authoritarian. There is no such thing as a democratic relationship in healing, because the client or the patient always knows less than the healer knows, and there's no way around it. Furthermore, eventually you come in contact with an unconscious patient, and then the doctor has no choice. He has to be authoritarian. And there are plenty of other patients who are to a greater or lesser degree unconscious. And that's why I agree that every healer has to be checked up on. But the reason why I take off on MDs is because you and other drugless healers, if I can put you in that category, have the great advantage of being prohibited by law from using medicine and surgery. And therefore, you're not as likely to kill somebody as I am. That's why I take off after doctors. You see, you, for example, naturopaths, homeopathic doctors and others, are not responsible for what we inside of medicine call the major iatro epidemics of our time. Iatro, Greek word for doctor produced. If you take a look at the doctor produced epidemics, and today we're seeing them, the salmonella deaths, the carnage from the DPT vaccine, and now the measles vaccine cases are coming up, the epidemics from the maternal analgesia and anesthesia, the predicted epidemic of damage from ultrasound, which some of us think will be to the 1980s what DES was to the 1940s, that doesn't exist with other healers. And that's why I think that you're a lot safer, although not completely safe.
I think some of the most dangerous people, though, are some of the MDs who are billed as doing alternative medicine.
Oh, yes.
Trust them, especially.
And let me...
Yes. People often spend $10,000 and do, since they do have available to them drugs and surgery,
yes,
that are alternative, quote, but still unproven.
That's why my argument is that the MD is dangerous regardless of what he does, and that the only time to go to a doctor is when you are carried to a doctor for the care of shock, trauma, hemorrhage, broken bones, spinal meningitis, the acute abdomen. And even then you're likely to be in trouble. Because since you and I last talked, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? The doctors in the emergency rooms, particularly in the large research and teaching hospitals, have become very, very dangerous, because they have changed the definition of death. According to all traditional religions, the definition of death is determined by circulatory and respiratory criteria. Your heart has to stop beating and your lungs have to stop breathing. But not according to doctors. They now say you are dead when you have a flat electroencephalogram, and they call that brain death, because if they wait for your heart to stop beating and your lungs to stop going, they will not be able to harvest the organs. And these days, the transplant surgeons are waiting in the wings of those large research and teaching hospitals, which is why I tell everybody that if you are taken from the scene of an automobile accident to a hospital, do not say to the doctor, "Have a heart," because he might take yours.
Tom, did you want to say something?
Oh, here.
Tom had it.
I just want to comment that you know, most of us spend more money taking care of our cars. You know, he's been telling how bad the doctors are, but I wanted to say that people are really responsible for their own health, and they usually seek out a doctor or a person to do them in. And most people spend more every year taking care of their cars than they do their own health. If you stop and think, you take your car to a garage, you've got an electronic ignition, electronic fuel injection, all the pollution controls, you wouldn't take it into the corner garage and want the guy to take a screwdriver to it and just adjust it here and there. You'd want him to put the instruments on it to adjust it properly. And yet, the majority of people go to a doctor or an alternative therapist, and they say, here, try this drug or try this vitamin. Now, my experience is that even though there is considerably more risk and much more danger in the drugs, I think we're finding now, and I'm seeing people where they have been harmed by taking excessive amounts of certain amino acids. I think amino acids can be either very helpful or very dangerous. And I think, unfortunately, people who are unable to perform the measurements or find someone to do it may be hurting themselves with some of these things as well. So that it's not just the doctors. Unfortunately, it's the physicians who have the ability to make these tests that aren't doing it because they're not interested in nutrition that force people to seek other alternatives.
Tom, I have a question here that underscores what you're saying. When my daughter was 7 and my son was 3, I gave them vitamins and they got blue lumps on their body. After I stopped the vitamins, the blue lumps went away. Very good. Okay, next. Annual mammograms after 50, do you advise? Well, I suppose everybody here knows how the doctors have flip-flopped on mammography. The reason why I'm interested in mammography is because I was originally taught self-examination of the breasts, and I was taught that the women should examine their breasts once a year. Then later it became twice a year. Then later it became once a month. And then it became once a week. And then it became three times a day when you brush your teeth. And that's what happened, the self-examination of the breasts. And then mammography came along and said, well, self-examination of the breast is no good anyway, because mammography will pick up lumps that are even smaller than the kind that you will be able to find yourself. But the question that I ask everybody is, what are you going to do if you do find a lump? Because now we know, after 100 years, as a result of the studies of Dr. Bernard Fisher and Dr. George Kreil, that the radical mastectomy which women exposed themselves to was a no-good operation, that it killed more than it cured. And so now doctors are retreating to the lumpectomy, and nobody knows if the lumpectomy is any better, because nobody's ever done a controlled study where they took half of the women with lumps and operated on them and took the other half and left them alone to see what the difference in outcome might be. As far as anybody now knows, it may be that the survival rate is higher in the untreated patients than in the treated patients. So I can tell you that the people who are close to me don't go for mammograms, whether they're 15, 50, or 105. But if you believe in doctors and you believe in x-rays, then I guess it's a free country. Yes? Well, hasn't it been proven that mammography is a small dose of radiation? Well, you see, my problem with that is that they told us a long time ago that x-rays were a small dose of radiation. When I got taught to treat the tonsils with x-rays, I was taught the dose of radiation is so small, 700 rads, that you don't have to worry about damage. What do we have now? A generation of people with cancer of the thyroid gland because of x-ray treatment to the tonsils, x-ray treatment for ringworm at the scalp, acne of the face, swollen lymph glands in the neck, an enlarged thymus gland, a condition that never even existed. So as soon as a doctor tells me, oh, I'm just giving you a small dose of radiation, then I know that either he doesn't know history or else that he's lying.
What about dental x-rays?
Well, the dental x-rays, the dangers of dental x-rays should be visible to everybody, because when the dentist puts you in that chair, you'll notice that he runs behind the lead screen before he shoots the juice in there. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm very interested in telling people that when you shop around for a dentist, find out somebody who will take care of your teeth without x-rays. Now, if you can't find somebody like that, then you might want to read the documentation which I have in my newsletter on dentistry, and which comes from a book called Health Shock, showing that if you take teeth that are decayed, cavities, and you leave them alone, one-third of all cavities will remineralize without any intervention on the part of the dentist. Think about that for a while. Yes. Here it is. Sorbinil, the diabetes drug Dr. Jasmine is working with. Oh, I don't know anything about it. You want to educate me?
Well, probably it's the problem with sore legs, sore feet, and that there's an accumulation of some chemical, and that's sorbinil, lots of that, and they had
it. Well, you see, the reason why I have a problem with what you're advising is what you're asking is because, number one, I don't know anything about it. And I do know that if it's a chemical, I'm going to find out something bad about it because Eli Lilly, who founded the drug company that bears his name, once said, any drug without toxic effects is not a drug at all. Now, the second reason why I have a little problem is because for the last 10 or 15 years, I've been telling people with either type 1 or type 2 diabetes that they should be looking for the nutritional approaches like those of Dr. James Anderson from the University of Kentucky or Dr. Henry Davidson from Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta, where they take care of 90% of their diabetic patients with diet alone. They get 90% of their diabetics off of insulin. And I'm very impressed with that. If I see a diabetic today on insulin, I want to know what he's doing on insulin. Because now it's been shown in the animal studies that the longer you're on insulin, the more damage is done to the small blood vessels, which is the chief cause in later life of retinopathy and gangrene. The doctor tells you the reason why your leg has to be amputated and the reason why you're turning blind is because I've been so successful in keeping you alive. So you should be grateful to me. But what he doesn't tell you is that very likely it is his insulin which has been responsible for those late complications. Does not pasteurized milk have more fat content and higher in cholesterol? Does non-pasteurized milk? Well, all that I can tell you is that I remember when I was very young, they used to deliver milk to our house, and it used to have cream on top. And I used to like to drink off the cream. I don't know if anybody else here did that, but now that cream is all dispersed by homogenization and pasteurization. I suppose I would have to refer you to the two books that I recommended for more information on non-homogenized milk, and particularly that new book by Dr. William Douglas, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized.
Two more questions.
I'll pick out some. Oh, here's a blank. Look at that. Another blank. Okay. Does some kind of test in any part of the body cause sickness? Who wrote it? Sonar. Well, now that we know the dangers of sonography in the lithotripter patients and the dangers of sonography in the human infant, described in a dozen experimental studies now, and one human study from the University of Oxford Child Cancer Survey, where they showed that the incidence of leukemia was higher in children who had been subjected to ultrasound inside the womb. My guess is that ultrasound for anything, sonar for anything, has risks. They haven't been quantified yet, and they haven't even been studied yet. And I hope that that'll be the next kind of study that'll be done. I still like people who treat by their hands instead of by machines. Hard to find. Baby with a lady gets to ask a question. Please.
This is Judy Sweater and Barbara.
Oh. Hi. And now I see you.
This baby was not supposed to be born. They wanted to terminate it 5 times. And Dr. Mendel saw me through it, and nutrition really worked. Barbara,
well, Judy, you are really nice. You are really nice to come out. I appreciate it. Baby looks so big, I wouldn't have recognized the baby. That's marvelous. Last question. Please say a few words about childhood immunizations. Well, I suppose I should give you the end first, which is that my 5 grandchildren have been born at home, have been nursed for long periods of time, and have had no immunizations. And of course, their neighbors cannot understand how they're still alive. And that's why I recommend to everybody that you find out the risks of the shots before you have the shots. This year has been a banner year because there are now 3 excellent sources of information. The first was that 2020 program this March about the risks of immunizations. And if you didn't see the program, you can write to them for a transcript. The second was the new book called DPT, A Shot in the Dark, by Harris Coulter and Barbara Fisher, which gives 300 pages of risks. The third source, and that book was published by Harcourt Brace Jovanovich. The third source is a little booklet put out by lawyers called Advocates for a Safe Vaccine. And you can get that book through Senator Paula Hawkins or through Congressman Henry Waxman. Or Joe Cessny. Joe, do you want to stand up for a moment? Joe Cessny, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the experts on damage from immunizations. And whoever asked that question should absolutely try to meet with Joe Cessny later on. Does that answer in general the question that was asked? Yes? Oh, well. Thank you for bringing it to my level of consciousness. I'm going to turn this over to Barbara for the last word.
I think we have about a last word, and who can anyway follow him? But I know Marjorie wants to say something.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara.
Barbara, come back. And Bob, please come back. We want to thank our pediatrician and grandmother very much for a wonderful program. And Noah has a small gift that we give to our excellent speakers. These are familiar things which are available. We're very proud of them, and they are available at the back of the room for anyone. The NOAA cookbook, Cooking for the Health of It, and a small pamphlet, Enjoy Nutritious Variety, the rotation diet for people who wish to introduce interesting variety into their lives and in that way try to avoid any food sensitivities. And I have this for Barbara Satchel, and I have this for Dr. Mendelson. And I do want to mention the material that is on everybody's chair. There's a very nice green sheet that Barbara put together, just one sheet of excellent suggestions on health. And we also have Noah's Bullseye, which is excellent on nutrition. And we have the Noah's book list, which has, for example, the exact title of the book on the heart by Dr. Morrison. And then, last but not least, we have a list of tapes. And I do want to mention, we have our tape is done professionally by Dr. Gregory Weathers, who I'd like to stand at this moment. the tape of this lecture is available to everyone, and the reason we like to have the questions on cards is that so that the questions as well as the answers will always be on these very fine tapes. Now, I hope everyone will have a very wonderful time visiting, and you'll find excellent things also at the back of the room, and then we'll all join for lunch. Thank you.